Here comes another edition of the Fantasy Guru Podcast featuring the latest news, player and team analysis, fantasy strategy, and more. And now, here are the resident gurus, Joe Dolan and Graham Barfield.
Yes, indeed. Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Fantasy Guru Podcast on the Podcast One Network at podcastone.com. I am fantasyguru.com managing editor Joe Dolan. Pleased to be joined for the first time ever, at least on a podcast that I'm hosting, our new senior analyst, Graham Barfield. Graham's been doing amazing work at fantasyguru.com, breaking down all the numbers. It has been phenomenal, and we have plenty of that to get to. I just want to remind everyone that this is a brand new podcast feed for us at fantasyguru.com. We've been tweeting it out. We've been putting it on the homepage. But if you are a listener to the podcast, please remember that you have to resubscribe to the iTunes feed. We are posting the new link. You can also download the official Podcast One app. You can certainly also go to podcastone.com/fantasy-guru and listen there. And you can also find us on your favorite third-party podcast apps like Overcast and Pocket Cast. Just go into there, into the search function, search Fantasy, make sure there's a space in there, Fantasy Space Guru, the one with the blue logo and the most recent podcast episodes from this month. Those will be our podcasts. Today we just are going to break down some of the recent news around the NFL, and this is going to be something that I think we're going to get used to doing during the season. Graham and I, whether it be late in the week, I think that's what we're going to focus on once we get into the season. Late in the week, we're going to break down some latest news, hit some last-second stats. That's what Graham is good at, and I'm really excited for this relationship now. And before I welcome in Graham, though, I want to remind everyone, certainly, that football is your passion. You know all the players and teams, their strengths and weaknesses. Now put that knowledge to the test and play for your shot at the $1 million top prize at DraftKings.com. It's just part of the $5 million in total prizes they're doling out in this week one contest. DraftKings.com is the destination for 1 week fantasy football. 1 week fantasy means no season long commitments. Play whenever you want with the players you want. Just pick your contest, draft your players, and follow your team live. Renew old rivalries by challenging friends and family in a private league to prove you're the superior GM, or join an existing league and go head-to-head with friends, co-workers, and fantasy players from all across the country. I personally have been playing a ton of DFS golf this offseason, but I'm ready for football, and DraftKings is certainly the best at that. I love the flex, and I love the no kickers. So hurry to DraftKings.com now to choose your players, and you could seriously cash in week one. Use code GURU, that's G-U-R-U, and play for free with your first deposit. That's code GURU, G-U-R-U, to play free for your share of the $5 million in total prizes in this week one contest. Only at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. See the website for details. Go to DraftKings.com. And remember, that is promo code GURU, G-U-R-U. So finally, Graham, I get to welcome you in. I just want to remind people, follow me, Joe Dolan, at FG_Dolan. And follow Graham Barfield at the much easier to remember, at Graham Barfield, bar and field, two of my favorite things put together. Very easy to remember. Graham, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good. I definitely have the no underscore. It's always a funny running joke that we have on fantasy Twitter when people have the underscore on their name. So I'm very, very simple. And Joe, I too have been losing money playing DFS golf this offseason. That's funny that you should mention that. I'm really excited to finally get DFS back around for football.
I am a much better Graham at real golf. That is completely false. Tom Browley's sitting next to me. He'll groan at me for saying that. I'm much better at DFS golf than I am at real golf, so at least I have that going for me. I don't know how your golf game is, but I am awful at it.
Oh, it's terrible. I mean, I can hit the ball a mile. I just have no idea where it's going. So that we both have that in common.
I can't hit it a mile, and I don't know where it's going. So so you have one up on me. So I'm driving into Graham to the office this morning. As a matter of fact, I'm taking my car to the shop because I ran over a damn nail and I needed to get a flat tire fixed. And it just so happens, it always happens this way. that when I have something that's an inconvenience in my life, there is inevitably going to be football news. And today, it was kind of a stunner. A stunner in regards to the player it involved and the compensation that was involved, but not necessarily to the team receiving the player. And I'm talking about Dorial Green-Beckham. And the Eagles trade for Dorial Green-Beckham. All they give up for a guy who was a second rounder in 2015 is backup offensive lineman Dennis Kelly, who's a decent player. But if you've never heard of him, don't fret, because this is a guy who started, I believe, two games in 2015. He's a decent swing tackle who gets traded to Tennessee for a guy who Graham was compared, rightfully or wrongly, pre-draft to Calvin Johnson. He's got Demaryius Thomas comps. He's got Plaxico Burress comps. As a matter of fact, I think that might have been one of the more popular comps. But this is a guy who the Titans are giving up on after a year. They're not even letting him take the field in his second year. They're more content going with some of the young guys they have. I understand why the Eagles did it. I mean, of course, aside from the domestic violence accusations, which are certainly the most serious part, but from a football standpoint, DGB can't pick up the playbook, bad conditioning, all those things. But regardless, he's big and he can run. And the Eagles don't have either of those things in their wide receiver core. But I think the compensation the Titans gave up, or gave him up for, rather, tells you all you need to know about Dorial Green-Beckham at this stage.
Yeah, it was the most odd thing ever, man. Like, I was logging into Twitter just about to start my work day, and I see that Dorial Green-Beckham got traded for an offensive lineman like I had remembered in passing from last year from all the Eagles shuffling that they had to do because of injuries. But I thought I was being trolled. It was just so random. Like, we never see player-for-player trades like this in training camp. And we never really see second-year players get traded after 15 months on the job. And never do we see players that are, you know, prior top 50 picks get traded after 15 months. It was so bizarre. And like you mentioned, I mean, the compensation they gave up for DGB was just, I mean, pretty much minuscule. I mean, if you wanted to know how Tennessee felt about DGB and how they felt about how his progression was coming along, just look at the trade compensation here. I mean, it's just bizarre from almost every standpoint.
So DGB all offseason has been on our players to avoid overvalued list at fantasyguru.com, which you can go check out. That's updated pretty much every week. And I'm not entirely sure this is going to change things, Graham, because I have been down on Dorial Green-Beckham as a player. I actually wanted to go back to what we said about him in our pre-draft rookie report. This was even before he got drafted. We ranked him number 10 in last year's wide receiver draft class, which I think is as low as anybody had him, simply because, as I mentioned, the domestic violence accusations are by far the most serious. And then he had major red flags on the field, work ethic and all that, and those things have come to pass. At least the on-field things have come to pass with the Titans. But we said this with DGB in his pre-draft write-up last year and said, after seeing all of the problems that the Browns went through with Josh Gordon, it's fair to wonder if Green-Beckham will slide down draft boards. Like Gordon, Green-Beckham could be the NFL's top wide receiver one year and out of the league the next. Now, we haven't seen that level of potential or anywhere close to it with DGB, but the red flags were there, and it's very clear that the Titans feel they wasted a draft pick on this guy. So my question to you is, you did the research, and you can check this out on fantasyguru.com as well. To those listening, this is actually a free article. You don't even need to subscribe. How do you think Dorial Green-Beckham, if at all, impacts the Eagles' offense?
Yeah, I'm kind of the mind, like, of the drumbeat that we've heard all offseason from DGB. You know, he can't pick up the playbook in year two. I thought it was kind of just noise. It just kind of beat writers just sticking their nose out there saying he's behind Tajae Sharpe, who is a fifth-round pick this year. All of that came to pass. So I was wrong. I thought, you know, some of the negative connotations surrounding DGB was just kind of noise of the offseason, but I'm pretty much in a complete agreement with you and John and the whole staff on DGB. I drafted DGB once, I think, this year, and I won't ever draft him again. Frankly, I think he's going to play fifth fiddle to J. Matt Ertz and certainly Darren Sproles. You could also toss out Ryan Matthews. I mean, this is a guy who could not pick up the offense in one 1.5 years with a new team. And I mean, the thing is, you know, the major problem beyond his, you know, on field and perhaps maybe some mental concerns and not being able to pick up playbooks is like Philadelphia is going to try to run a really slow paced, grinding offense under Doug Peterson. This is not going to be a voluminous attack that is just like on fire with snaps like with Chip Kelly had last year. This is going to be a slow paced, grinding attack. So I think DGB, you pretty much have to take them all off all draft boards for the foreseeable future. In Dynasty, it's even worse in Dynasty because if you've been sitting on him, you pretty much have to keep sitting on him and just hope he hits the ceiling.
So yeah, I agree with that. And look, the reason the Eagles made this deal and the reason they took on all the concerns with Green Beckham and the fact that they can bet on whatever upside this guy has, if it's theoretical or if it's an illusion, the reason is because their wide receiver position, frankly, is not good. And that's not necessarily to blame Howie Roseman, who's the de facto GM there, or not necessarily to blame Doug Peterson, the head coach. This is the result, Graham, of several failed off seasons of Chip Kelly. And right now, Chip Kelly has had 3 first-round draft picks in his tenure with Philadelphia. He had them. Only one of them is projected to be a major contributor to the team, and that's Lane Johnson, and he might miss the first 10 games of the season because of a PED suspension. Nelson Aguilar, look, I don't want to write a guy off after one season, but every indication right now is that the Eagles, and at least the new regime in Philadelphia, does not believe in Nelson Aguilar. They believe that if he produces anything more than as a number 4 or 5 wide receiver, that's going to surprise them. 2 years ago, they took Josh Huff before guys like Dante Moncrief and Martavis Bryant came off the board. So we're talking about a team in Philadelphia that is struggling to find active contributors at the wide receiver position. So that explains why they did this with DGB. But other than Jordan Matthews, I don't think they have anybody who really is going to project as a major contributor here.
Yeah, Joe, you know what's funny is like this is actually a pretty good spot for DGB to land in. The Eagles actually have 127 vacated targets from 2015, and that works out to be about 21% of their total targets lost. You know, Jordan Matthews is going to man the slot. That's where he ran 93% of his routes in 2015. But they just have no outside options, like you mentioned. I mean, Nelson Aguilar was, he dealt with an ankle injury all last year and had some tough matchups, but I agree with you. There isn't much positive to take on Aguilar, and as from what we've garnered through, you know, roughly 16 months of DGB's very short career, he's a project, to say the least. So I think the Eagles are probably going to have to run their offense through the interior this year, through J-Matt and through Zach Ertz. And Zach Ertz actually had 112 targets last year. That was 19%. Of the Eagles' entire offense. So I think Ertz actually might see an uptick here, as weird as that is. If they don't get anything out of Aguilar or anything out of DGB or their outside options, I think Ertz and Matthews and even Darren Sproles too. Darren Sproles saw 83 targets last year. I think those three guys are going to be the main draft options, at least from their passing attack.
If you're a DGB believer, I think the point here is you're hoping he gets a kick in the butt like a Chris Carter or, I guess, somebody like that who clearly it just didn't work out in his first stop and he lands in a better spot. And this is a better spot for him in terms of opportunity. But in terms of the offense, yeah, the Eagles lost 21% of their target share. The issue is they might also lose upwards of 30% of their play share with Chip Kelly leaving town and Doug Peterson coming in. So there might not even be that many targets to replace, even though they lost some of those players. I agree with you. I think DGB is still the same person to me for fantasy. He is an illusion. He is a ghost. He is somebody that you might want to believe in, but I just don't really see a comfortable spot for me to draft him. But as for the Titans, I think this makes their picture maybe a little bit clearer. Even though I wasn't buying into DGB at all, it means that their talk about Tajay Sharpe and Rishard Matthews, at least that stuff wasn't coach speak. So where do those guys rank now for you?
Yeah, for me, I mean, I think it changes it in the sense that it makes it a little more clear. I mean, Sharpe and Matthews are going to be working the outside, and Kendall Wright, he's going to be manning the slot. But to me, this just solidifies how I want Delanie Walker, and that's really it from these guys. I mean, I like taking Rishard Matthews in like the 12th to 13th round. You know, he'll probably lead the Titans wideouts and targets. But yeah, I'm still on Walker. I mean, he had 26.2% of the Titans passing attack last year. You know, they want to run this quote unquote exotic smash mouth offense, whatever that means. But the Titans still trailed on 62.3% of their snaps last year. That was the fourth highest trail rate in the league. So, you know, they can say that they want to run the ball behind DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry all they want. But frankly, I still think Tennessee's going to trail quite a bit. And Delanie Walker is still going to see a massive amount of Mariota's targets. So yeah, in theory, it does make it a little more clear. You know, it gets DGB out of the picture and Sharp's going to run more routes outside. But I still want the I still want the interior target hog and Delanie Walker.
So, Graham, moving to another piece of news that came out today, maybe something that additionally might sound like a bigger piece of news than it actually is. I want to talk about Brandon LaFell. It came down today that Brandon LaFell actually might need surgery on a torn ligament in his hand that was first reported by Mike Garofalo of NFL Network. And I'm not really sure why it took this Brandon LaFell news for me to realize this, but I've been saying all offseason, if I can pick my draft spot, I want one of the top three picks, and that's for the big three. You're Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, Odell Beckham, whichever order you have those in, and I still think those are clearly the big three this year. But I've always also been saying, I don't want the number four pick. I hate the number four pick. I hate having to make that decision, and I think I came to the realization that I'm completely fine with the number four pick. And whether this Brandon LaFell news making me realize it was the deciding factor or not, and it really shouldn't have been, I am completely fine taking AJ Green at number four. And I absolutely love what teams look like from there. I don't think they look as good as if you have the Julios, the Beckhams, the Antonio Browns, but I still really like what's available in the second and third round if you take AJ Green at number four. And I know you're also high on AJ Green, and I think I have him locked into my number four overall slot this year. And whether this LaFell news made me realize it or not, I think that's a good thing. It gives me one more player I feel really good about in the first round. And the good news is, a lot of people listening, AJ Green might be available after number four for you. It's a miracle if OBJ, Julio, or Antonio Brown is available after number three for you. But AJ Green, I know he's lasted to 9 to 10. People are reaching for running backs, and I'm saying he's my number four overall player, and I would take him at number four, and I certainly would take him later than that. What is it about AJ Green that you like this year? Am I off base here? Is this LaFell news make things any better, or does it just highlight this situation a little bit more?
Yeah, I think it highlights it a little bit more. For what it's worth, Marvin Jones did say that they want LaFell back by week one. They're expecting him to be back by week one. But we've heard the same thing out of Tyler Eifert, who's dealing with an ankle issue. Mm-hmm. That they want him. They want him. They want him back by week one. But yeah, I totally agree with you, Joe. I think AJ Green could actually lead the league in targets this year. And I know that might sound crazy, but let me roll back the clock just a few years. In 2013, he garnered 31% of the Cincinnati Bengals' targets. That was the fourth highest share among receivers that year. And the year after, in 2014, he garnered 32%. Of the Cincinnati Bengals targets. That was the third highest target share. Last year, it dipped to 26.7%. His target share did. So with Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu now out of town, and now we've got LaFell, at least questionable for week one, perhaps, first couple weeks of the season, Tyler Eifert's questionable. AJ Green is going to get absolutely spoon-fed targets, just like what we expected out of Julio Jones last year. I totally agree with you that he's the number four overall player on the board. I'm taking him at number four overall if I have the number four overall pick. What's most interesting, I think actually AJ Green might be in a tier of his own. So we'll have the top three, and then Green, and then Dez, like New Hopkins, Keenan Allen, and Allen Robinson. What do you think about that? Do you think Green's kind of in a tier of his own now?
Yeah, I completely agree, because I wouldn't take him over any of the top three. And those top three, I said, I don't think it's cut and dry that Antonio Brown's the number one pick. I don't think it's cut and dry that Julio's number two. I kind of like the order that people have them in, but I think you can make a legitimate argument for Julio at number one or Odell Beckham at number one. I don't think you can really make that argument for Green, but there is a lot going for him. Number one, I think the offense should be similar. Ken Zampezi's coming in there. He's been the quarterback coach there for a while. I know he's worked with the receivers in the past. There should at least be some consistency from Hugh Jackson to this, even though I'm not entirely sure Zampezi's as talented a play caller as Hugh Jackson. Number two, game flow. The Bengals have consistently been a good team since A.J. Green got into the NFL. This isn't worrying about a team, a guy losing targets because his team's projected to be better this year. The Bengals have been a playoff team. Unless I'm mistaken, I think they've been a playoff team every single year Green's been in the NFL. So you don't have to worry about this team getting better and Green losing targets. Heck, if they get worse, if they regress, then maybe he even gets more targets. So we know what he's going to look like in this offense. He is the clear number one. In that regard, he might be a mini Julio Jones. There's nobody else to challenge him here for targets, except maybe Gio Bernard. Gio Bernard might be the number two receiver in that offense if Tyler Eifert isn't out there.
Yeah, Tyler Eifert still hasn't practiced yet, and there's a very good chance. I mean, I know a lot of the Bengals coaches and their GM want to, you know, keep fans in tune and keep them, you know, wanting to come. But I think there's a legitimate chance that Tyler Eifert actually starts the year on PUP or at least misses, you know, the first 3 to 4 games. So, yeah, A.J. Green, I'm totally on board with him going completely nuclear like Julio Jones did last year. They don't have anybody else. I mean, I know Tyler Boyd is going to run more out of the slot, and maybe the LaFell injury, if he does miss his time, miss some time, you know, that'll push Boyd out of the slot and more outside. But yeah, I mean, A.J. Green is just, I have, there's a ceiling of 200 targets for A.J. Green this year. And, you know, like you said, Cincinnati was bottom four in trail rate last year. So even if they do regress and get a little bit worse in terms of game flow, I only think that can help A.J. Green, man.
And I'm looking at ADP right now. I'm at fantasypros.com, and they're the ones who have really the more consensus ADP. In PPR leagues, he's the 7th player off the board. So by my personal rankings, your personal rankings, he's a value right now. In standard, he's the 12th player off the board. So if you're in a non-PPR, take advantage of that. I would take him before I take any running back, even in a non-PPR league. I just feel better about him than I do about a Todd Gurley or about David Johnson. And I certainly give Gurley a boost in a standard league, at least more so than I would in a PPR. And I like Gurley. He's my number one running back. But I would still take A.J. Green over them in a standard league. So if you draw that last pick, don't fret, because I think there's a guy on the board in Green who is capable of coming through in a big way. And I'm not sure why this LaFell news made me realize that, but I almost had kind of an epiphany today with it. And I don't know how you feel about Tyler Boyd, Graham. He is a really polarizing player. The metrics guys absolutely hate him. The film guys like him a little bit more than that, although there's a kind of a divided opinion on him in those. I know Matt Harmon doesn't love him in terms of reception perception, but he was uber productive at Pitt, and now it looks like he's going to get opportunities, and he made a Tyler Boyd-ish catch in the first preseason game. I'm not sure if you saw it, but he barely gained separation on Jabari Price, and AJ McCarron just kind of threw the ball up there. It was a pretty good throw, and Boyd contorted his body and made a grab. He's going to get opportunities, and he's still relatively free for fantasy. So I think he's a guy who's appealing to add to the back end of your bench.
Yeah, I totally agree. And on to that point, I mean, let's say LaFell does miss some time, right? Yeah. The Cincinnati Bengals have 152 vacated targets from last year. That is a massive, massive share. So Boyd has, in theory, a huge share of open targets at his disposal. And no matter what you think, I mean, like, even if you think he's not that great of a player, if you were low on him coming out of Pitt, it kind of doesn't matter. To your point, he's free. I mean, he's going outside of the top 60 wide receivers in average draft position, and he's walking into a huge, huge open target share opposite A.J. Green. So I'm on board. I've been drafting Boyd kind of after the 13th or 14th round. I've been getting him slipping into the 15th and 16th round in some of these NFL 10s. So I'm on board with Boyd as like a wide receiver 6, wide receiver 7 option that can easily blow past his ADP.
And to kind of wrap things up, and we have a little bit of discussion to have about this, Graham. I was just discussing how I'm still in on the wide receiver thing. I know it's the chic thing this year, but I just feel safer about them. And you went into a study about the running back position and how fantasy points per game, while it is a baseline stat that's relatively useful, it shows you how much a guy produces. It's not the tell-all stat that you might think it is. It's a pretty much, frankly, it's a lazy stat that you can use to contort to make guys look better than they are, make them look worse than they are, whatever the case. And a guy I point to last year is Latavius Murray, who was basically a top 15 running back by this metric simply because he was available. But how many times last year did you use Latavius Murray and feel like, you know what, he won me my week? I won because of Latavius Murray. And you called this impact games. And I think it's a really interesting way to look at the running back position in particular, because I think it's a more inconsistent position than the wide receiver position. What did you find in your study? And I know this was in PPR, but what did you find in your study that might interest people?
Yeah, so to your point, I think a wide receiver player is a lot more binary. Like, they're getting targets, they're much more projectable, and they're either producing or they're not. Running back play is obviously a lot less binary. You know, it depends on game flow. It depends on offensive line performance, quarterback performance. And to your point, points per game is one of those statistics that's okay to use if you know how to filter through it. But to me, it's kind of prone to outliers. It can be, like you mentioned, it's not fully encapsulating to a player's actual potential. Like Latavius Murray did not have many impact weeks last year. He actually only had, I believe it was three top 12 weeks. Mm-hmm. So to that point, in PPR leagues, I basically just did a study of the top 12, and I might actually go and do a little bit more in the top 36 in the next couple weeks. But I just looked at the top 12 guys going in average draft position and basically just compared baseline averages to each other. I looked at, you know, Todd Gurley at the top and then Doug Martin, who is the RB12 at the bottom, and came away with some pretty interesting conclusions, actually. And I'll start just from the middle here with Jamaal Charles. Jamaal Charles has finished as a top six back. That's meaning he's finished inside of the top six in any given week from 2010 to 2015 in PPR leagues in 37.7% of his games, which is a huge, huge ceiling. Just to kind of compare that, the next closest guy to him is Adrian Peterson, who's finished as a top six running back in nearly 37% of his games, just below that. So Jamaal Charles, to me, I think is the most undervalued ceiling type running back that we can get in the middle of the second round. And you know what's funny, Joe, is we can pair Charles with AJ Green.
Putting that together with the AJ Green discussion that we just had, man, you don't need to draft Todd Gurley at number four overall to get an elite running back, or potentially elite running back. Certainly Jamaal Charles is falling to the second round for good reason. Number one, he's coming off an ACL tear. Number two, he's almost 30. Number three, he's got two very competent backs behind him. But this study shows that when he's out there, he is elite. A top six finish is elite, and he does it nearly 40% of the time.
Yeah, what was crazy too on this study is he finished in the top 12 on 58% of his starts. That was by far the best rate in this study. Le'Veon Bell was actually second in this metric. LeSean McCoy is actually second in this metric at nearly 56%. But yeah, we've seen Charles just blow past any type of touch concerns that we have. He's actually finished fifth, first, and ninth in PPR points per opportunity in 2012 to 2014. He's always been just a huge bastion of efficiency. So yeah, I'm all on board with Charles in the second round. And what's great is, I mean, we can get AJ Green and then just back that up with a huge ceiling running back. Even though he might not see 18 to 20 opportunities per game anymore, we know he can be super efficient on limited touches.
Yeah, he. I believe the last time he played a full season in 2014, he averaged 18 fantasy points per game, had these huge ceiling weeks, and he averaged 16 touches a game. So he's. Right. I mean, how many times has Andy Reid actually had to apologize for not using Jamaal Charles enough? And yeah. He still puts up these big numbers. So I agree with you. I actually tend to prefer Devontae Freeman. I feel like he's a little bit safer than Charles, but you're getting me more in your corner here with these these number breakdowns. And I know some of these guys you can't look at that kind – this is a study over the last 6 years, so we're also factoring in guys when they were backups or when they were little-used rookies like Devontae Freeman. But one guy I really want to discuss based on this study is Lamar Miller. And I think Miller is one of those players who we've been generally frustrated with his usage. And for some reason, it changes when the Dolphins make a coaching change, and then it goes back to where it was, where he feels like he's underutilized. Are you more confident in Lamar Miller in Houston, and what did you find in this study that might temper your expectations a little bit?
Well, frankly, Joe, it just made me hate Joe Philbin even more. I mean, like, this is a guy, Lamar Miller has never averaged more than 13.5 carries per game. And now he's going to Houston under head coach Bill O'Brien. And Houston has finished first and fifth in team rush attempts over the past two seasons. And I was actually talking to, I was going back and forth with NFL.com's Matt Franchise on Twitter earlier today. And I brought up an interesting hypothesis to him. Like, what's holding back Lamar Miller from finishing as, like, the top RB or the second best running back in the league this year? I really, like, the only thing that I can see holding him back is really poor quarterback play from Brock Osweiler. But as we've seen from Bill O'Brien, he's been able to get the most out of his quarterbacks. I mean, frankly, we just saw it last year. They went to the playoffs with a smorgasbord of horrible, horrible play callers. And, I really, frankly, don't see how Lamar Miller has the top RB ceiling this year.
There's a guy on this list, this is the top 12 ADP running backs. Number 12 is Doug Martin. I have been avoiding Doug Martin this season, especially in PPR. I'm a little more into him in non-PPR. I just feel like he goes in an area where there's much more appealing players at the wide receiver position, and I'm just passing on Martin. And I'm also captain of the Charles Sims ship. I have said for months that I would take Charles Sims on any team I draft. I feel like he has a higher ceiling than Martin in the event Martin were to go down. But you had to also filter out Martin's terrible 2013 and 2014 seasons when doing this study, when he was affected by injury or whatever, and you had to filter that out while also recognizing he had excellent seasons in 2012 and 2015. Did you get a sense for who the real Doug Martin is when doing this?
Yeah, I what's funny is when I was putting this together over the weekend, I was getting my data all together. I had the same exact thoughts. I can't figure it out either. I mean, he had just the enormous rookie season where he was basically a league winner. And last year, he was sort of a league winner in a way last year as well. But if you filter out just his rookie season and just last year, so you chop out 2013, 2014, and those injuries were, those years were probably plagued a little bit by injury. His top 12 rate actually jumps up to about 37.5%, which is just below the sample average here. Just to kind of put that in perspective, I mentioned LeSean McCourt earlier had an elite 56% top 12 rate, and Todd Gurley's was actually 46.2%. So, at his ADP in the mid third round, he's priced about correctly. I think I would prefer Eddie Lacy, who's going one spot ahead of him. But I think I'm a little higher on Martin. I think he's got a decent floor, but he's another guy who kind of needs game flow. He needs to, his teams need to be, the Bucks need to be either favored by Vegas or they need to be ahead for them to really hammer him. I'm actually on board, ironically, with Charles Sims. I go both, kind of go both ways with those guys. I'm fine with both of them at their ADPs.
So if I were to bring up the question to just the average listener to the podcast, and I were to ask over the last few seasons of the top 12 ADP running backs for this year, who is third behind Jamaal Charles and Adrian Peterson in top six finish percentage? And as we've established, that's an elite finish at the running back position. Top six is a weak winning finish. It's Eddie Lacy. And this study includes his 2015 season when he did enough wrong that, I mean, I get people mad at me, Graham, when I mention Eddie Lacy on Twitter. People hate this guy because he had two very nice years to open his career, and then people started drafting him as high as number one overall last year, and he absolutely crapped the bed. But we still see a player who, in the context of this study, has a very high ceiling although his floor has been the issue.
Yeah, so what's great about Eddie Lacy is he actually has, like you mentioned, the third highest ceiling in this study. He actually has posted at a top 6 week in 30.4% of his starts. And that is just absurd ceiling for a guy who basically took the whole 2015 season off in theory because of his weight and conditioning concerns. You know, if we also filter out just keep his first 2 years in the league, his top 24 rate jumps to 68%. So that means he's finished as an RB2 or better in 68% of his starts. That's well above the sample average. So he, in theory, has a humongous ceiling and a decent enough floor. That's why I mentioned I think I like him more than Martin at his ADP, but he's already going just a few spots ahead of Martin. But I think we actually have Lacy projected in the top eight at last glance. I believe when we updated it last, I think we have Lacy just among the staff in the top eight.
Yeah, John Hansen really is into Lacy. He's not holding a grudge, and I think he's giving a little bit of a reprieve to the entire Packer offense because of the loss of Jordy Nelson. And Aaron Rodgers also had both statistically and arguably on film the worst year of his career. The offensive line got banged up late in the year. It just seems like everything that went wrong for that team did. And I could see people being a little bit surprised by Lacy. I haven't drafted him yet, whether it be MFL 10 or a standard draft, auction draft, whatever. I have him on my dynasty team, but I hadn't been drafting him. And you kind of opened my eyes here. The problem with Lacy has been, Graham, almost every single one of his top 12 weeks in his 3 years of his career has also been a top 6 week. So I think he might drive people mad nuts because you see how much he can dominate, but only 6.6% of his top 12 finishes were not also a top 6 finish. So when he hits his ceiling, he's awesome, but he drops off after that. So he was probably the most interesting player, in my opinion, that you looked at in this study.
Yeah, for me too, I thought he was definitely the most interesting. And like you mentioned, I mean, that whole offense just crumbled last year. I mean, not only did Lacy gain a bunch of weight and was reportedly playing at over 255, 260 pounds, which is just like behemoth for running backs.
He looked more than that too.
I know. I mean, he genuinely really did look way more than that. But they just fell apart without Nelson. They didn't have a field stretcher. They didn't have a sustainer. And if anything, I think the Packers offense just kind of gives us another example of how it's really hard to run a passing offense through the interior. I mean, I think we kind of hit on it a little bit with Philadelphia. Randall Cobb's a great player. I think he's a very, very good player for what he does, but it is impossible to run an offense through the interior. And just I think it was just kind of a smorgasbord of everything last year that kind of hurt Eddie Lacy.
And speaking of Randall Cobb, before we wrap this up, talk about, there's a name right there. You can pair with A.J. Green as your number two receiver after drafting at number four. Maybe pair him with a Jamal Charles. That's a hell of a start. So my big conclusion today, it's okay to draft four. Beyond that, you might be screwed. But it is okay to draft four. If you have that pick, take A.J. Green. I am very much into A.J. Green. But anyway, Graham, I just want to thank you for joining me today. You would not believe what we went through to get this podcast recorded, but we hope it comes off okay. I'm pretty sure it will. I want to remind people that John Hansen and Greg Cosell will also be contributing to the Fantasy Guru podcast very shortly. Look for that a little bit later this week. That is our flagship show. I want to thank people for checking us out on Podcast One. Go to podcastone.com/fantasy-guru. Look us up on iTunes. We'll be tweeting out the link. Please subscribe, rate, and review. You need to subscribe to the new feed. It's the one with the blue logo. If you're a listener to the podcast, a regular listener to John and Greg, you will be glad you did. If you use a third-party podcast app, just search Fantasy Space Guru, or you can download the Podcast One app. You can find us right on there. Very shortly, we'll be launching the brand new fantasyguru.com. And we're very excited about it. It's launching very, very soon. I wish I could give you all the details, but it will be coming very soon. And I want to remind people to follow me on Twitter at FG_Dolan. Follow Graham on Twitter at Graham Barfield. And follow the site on Twitter at Fantasy Guru Site. We hope you enjoy the podcast, everyone. Please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. And for Graham Barfield, I am Joe Dolan. Thank you very much, and have a great week.
Stay tuned for 60-second AP News headlines. AP Update, I'm Tim McGuire. Hillary Clinton is demanding once again that Donald Trump release his tax returns. To reporters writing on her campaign plane, Clinton accuses Trump of a number of questionable business deals over the years.
The list goes on and on. The scams, the frauds, the questionable relationships, the business activities that have stiffed workers, refused to pay small businesses.
Clinton is to be at a rally in Tampa this afternoon. Trump, for his part, is campaigning today in Virginia and North Carolina. AP White House correspondent Julie Pace reports Trump has been able to dial back the off-the-cuff remarks.
He likes to go in front of these big crowds and be more freewheeling and play off of their energy. Now he's going out there with teleprompters and with scripted remarks, and it really is a testament to his campaign leadership that they've gotten him to a point where he's willing to do this for at least a couple of weeks.
AP Update, I'm Tim McGuire.